conspiracies, endless wars, hidden forbidden history, the depopulation agenda, cryptozoology, mystical visions, hidden mysteries, advanced subterranean civilizations, flying saucers, alien abductions, and secret space programs, time travel, wellness, and healthy living. Where do you go to find out about these subjects and more? To James Bartley's Cosmic Switchboard Show. That's where. James Bartley will provide cutting-edge information and will interview the top investigators and researchers in a variety of fields. Listen in every week to the Cosmic Switchboard Show, hosted by James Bartley.
I'm James Bartley. This is the Cosmic Switchboard Show. It is my great pleasure to interview a dear friend, Solaris Blue Raven, who will talk to us about her experiences as being what she calls a test pilot in a remote neural interface mind control program, what she has learned over the years, what she has done to heal herself and to teach others about the nefarious nature of this technology and what we can all do to protect ourselves from same. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce you to Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris, how are you?
I'm great, James, and I want to thank you for having me on your show, and congratulations. It's going to be awesome.
Thank you, Solaris. This is a great pleasure for me. Can you go ahead and tell us a bit about yourself and tell us about how this odyssey began for you?
I sure can. Well, originally, let me tell you about who I am. First of all, well, I'm a published author, clairvoyant remote viewer. I have a background in covert technology and surveillance pertaining to synthetic telepathy and psychotronic hardware due to the induction that I went through in 2004. And I can back up the truck insofar as take a time-traveling trip back to when this actually started to happen. If you want me to go ahead and just roll with that, I can certainly do that right now.
Yes, and just so the listeners know, we will provide all the links and all the information so you can the listeners can avail themselves of Solaris's vital information at their own leisure at a future date. So go ahead, Solaris.
Okay, great. And yes, I'll add in the website and everything else and the books on Amazon and all that good stuff. So, well, getting back to where and when this actually happened was back in 2004, in April of 2004, to be exact, in Superior, Colorado. I had originally sent a book that I had written called Transmutation Through Ascension, which is about DNA activation and healing. It's a really beautiful book on ascension. And I had to go back even further. I had a kickboxing student of mine communicate to me some information about the band Rush and Neil Peart. And if we go back even further than that, the correspondence I had with Neil was back in the 80s and 90s originally. Initially, I had correspondence with him, and he would send me postcards, so this man knew who I was. But going back to the level of my kickboxing student, he had informed me that he had had a tragedy with his family, and his wife and daughter were killed, taken out. I call them taken out, and you'll understand why in a little bit here. But literally, I felt really bad about it, and I said, well, maybe I'll send my book over there. And I sure sent my book, and within a week's time, I had everything in my house under surveillance. I had my computer under surveillance. I had live plants in the area. I had my phones were tapped. I had all sorts of anomalous things going on in the house. And then I had myself hacked remotely with a neural assault program, which is really satellite-driven technology, which literally maps the electromagnetic field, neural circuitry, your four-body system, your psychic abilities. It maps everything and interfaces it onto an artificial intelligence array system. And when they do this, there's a live handler real-time with other agents and people. I will tell you that the people who initiated this assault was the band Rush. It was Neil Peart, Geddy Lee, Alex Lifeson, and Michael J. Mosbach. And these were the people that were contracted initially to do it. Michael is Neil Peart's right-hand man, and he literally just wired me into this technology. They started running programs with me. They told me who they were. These weren't imposters. This was live feed real time. And later on, when I met Michael in person, he admitted to a lot of this stuff. With me in person, face-to-face, out on Maui. And, of course, and we can go down to the level of when I had to testify in 2006, but to go through the trauma of what I went through in 2004, if you guys had met me in 2004, you would have just thought I was on some kind of drug or something, because at the time my husband thought I was being drugged. He was very concerned. And of course, coming from a black belt stance where I taught martial arts and second degree black belt, I didn't do drugs. I didn't do alcohol. Very strong person. My husband, we both were very clean people. So for me to look like I was acting drugged or I wasn't speaking, and I will tell you, when you get hit with this covert technology, with this synthetic telepathy, it interfaces you live feed real time, and you're constantly being communicated with a live handler. So I didn't communicate verbally to my husband. I was completely in a shock. I was in overdrive. My system was like on fire electrically. It was just completely rebooted to a very different frequency. My vitals started to drop at one point, and I know they rebooted me with the technology, almost like a transhumanism thing. So I went through these type of, it almost felt like a ceremony to some degree, yet there were other things that were happening simultaneously with the psychotronics, the visuals, the dialogue, the programming. And at first it was almost like an interrogation program. They literally were trying to interrogate me and say, this is who you are, and this is your birthday. And I'd say, no, that's not my name. And it would just go on and on and on and on. Excuse me. And the weird thing about it was they kept telling me I was Selena Taylor and my birthday is April 22nd. Now, why on earth would they tell me this? Because Selena Taylor was the daughter that got killed in the quote-unquote accident over in Canada, supposedly. So it was really strange to me, like they would try to create that template for me, almost like to create a split or an altar. And I fought him on it. I was completely like, no, that's not my name. That's not my birth date. And it just went on and on and on. So that was one of the things they were doing to me as far as trying to recreate an identity for me. And stop me anytime you need to, James, because otherwise I just kind of roll on with
it. Oh, no. Please, continue.
Okay, and thank you. And it's interesting because going back to that moment, there's just so many levels of it. Each time I look back at it and I glimpse it, I keep seeing more and more. But I will tell you, when I initially had this assault happen to me, when they first wired me into the technology, they started with the computer and key logging and transmitting signals through the computer, and then it was interconnected onto me live feed real time in my bedroom. And I will say, and I know you're familiar with this, James, how they can go after your sexual centers. They can literally map your kundalini. If any of you are very powerful psychics or mediums and your chakras are unified and you're very, very ramped up in who you are as a multidimensional being, which at the time they inducted me, I was teaching and doing DNA activation. I had a very powerful Merkaba signal, which you could actually feel the pulse of this signal. It was extremely powerful. And when they tagged me, they actually tagged that signal and interfaced it onto a communication system with a rhythm and what they quote, it was kind of like a bouncing rhythm. And it's really strange that Carrie Nuttall, who's the new wife of Pert and also a handler, wrote a book that same time in 2004 saying it was called Rhythm and Light for Neil. And this was about this induction. I mean, everything they do is in code. And I'll tell you point blank, it was really strange because when they inducted me, later on, they kept telling me that's what it's about, that's what it's about. And they kept pointing out this woman photographer, and it was her. And she is actually a photographer, a director of some kind of photography out in California. She's, you know, it was really strange how they were trying to tell me what was happening live feed real time. And I took notes and I documented everything, even back then in the space of trauma. But I will tell you, getting back to that room, because when they attacked me in my bedroom, it was all sexual. It was complete sexual. So for some people, they might say, well, maybe that was some kind of an entity of some kind. No, this were real people, real time, suited up, interconnected with me live feed, and really, really going after my multidimensional design work and actually utilizing my kundalini and my energy so they could communicate and actually open up the communication system. And I remember when they punched a hole, literally, it's like punching a hole through your brain to communicate live feed real time with the artificial telepathy. So it's almost like being pulled in or pushed into the matrix, a real matrix, like in the movie The Matrix, where you're getting plugged in and everything just starts to speed up and go fast forward. It was like I was speed reading. There was pattern recognition. I remember all sorts of patterns they were showing me. They were showing me serial numbers. I was writing numbers down. They were dictating to me, and I was making sure, and then we were playing it back. Live feed real time, though, this wasn't like a computer where it was just playing a game with me. This was Michael J. Mosbach and the band members' live feed. And a lot of this data that was communicated was actually replayed on the Rush Snakes and Arrows album. It was also indicated where they said, brought to you by conniption. That's a word they were using with me live feed real time when they first inducted me. So were there little codes, there's little signatures and codes that they give away so that we know what's going on versus anybody out in the outside world. They would never know. The fans wouldn't know. It has to be part of the inner circle. So that's what happened to me. And as I was being traumatized out of my house, I literally just couldn't stay there. I was getting so harassed 24 hours a day with the technology. My husband and I weren't speaking because I couldn't communicate. I was just completely interconnected with the artificial telepathy. So we wound up getting divorced in 4 months' time. And I will tell you also that they told me to go to a place of my choosing where they could get to me. And I didn't know what to do because I was completely in trauma and I was completely remotely controlled, for the most part, by Michael. And I went to Maui. And within a year's time, Michael J. Mosbach showed up and pretty much communicated to me about the hearing. He called it a special hearing. He said that I asked him if he had one, and he said yes, he used to. And then he said he was telling me that him and Neil are deaf in one ear. In other words, that's the communication code for being interconnected with the program, but also turning a deaf ear to the communication to some degree. But also, it's something they communicate insofar as a code for both of them. So there was a lot of little bits of information that were passed along to me with Michael out on Maui, and also when I was talking to him on the phone. But that's what happened to me. To sum it up, and I hope that I went into a lot more details. Feel free to ask questions, because I know I go really quick. So I'm trying to slow it down a little bit for you, but
it's quite all right. I can vouch for the remote sexual manipulation aspect. What I've been told by a number of people is that at least some kind of technology, it may not all be the same program or even the same precise technology, but there is a means to remotely manipulate a male or a female sexually. Mm-hmm. What's been described to me from males is it feels like their loins are activated, if you will. They're put into a heightened state of sexual arousal, and they have a movie playing in their mind. And the movie would be a scenario where they meet one or more desirable women, and in short order, through a form of telepathy or just profiling the individual and manipulating them, they make the individual want to engage in intercourse with one or more of these women that are presented to him in these dreamscape scenarios, and then they proceed with the act and whatnot. And for the most part, it feels real, and it can last for any length of time. The women in these scenarios, the fake women, they look the part, they act the part, but if one really takes the time to analyze what's going on, even in the act, the male, if he has enough heightened awareness, will realize this is not even real, this is not real intercourse, but they're just making me go through this mm-hmm. process. So, right. And I imagine that some forms of technology are more advanced than others and can make it more more lifelike,
right.
For lack of a better term.
What you're describing sounds almost like Montauk and the psychotronic driving system they use. But I will tell you, yes, the way they do things with me, that they were really there, though. This wasn't an imitation. These were the real people actually getting stimulated in their control rooms. And I know that for a fact.
Wow. That
makes it a little different. This is like having intimacy with a live partner, real time with this technology, artificial telepathy, and really just... they wanted, it's not even foreplay, and forgive me for that terminology, but literally you know what I'm talking about here. But it's more than that. I mean, literally these are real people getting stimulated in a room, the same thing's going back and forth with this type of technology. So it's not like they just put on a program and said, oh, we're just going to, mess with her. This was a real person getting off on it. So, and I will say there were multiple people in the room. So without getting into too many details, but we all know who they are.
Yes. And how would this affect you neurologically? Was the interference more or less constant, or did it spike at certain times of the day or night? And when it did seem to increase the activity, what did it feel like from a body energetic standpoint?
Well, after I was inducted with all the sexual interaction that they did to me, I was pretty much wired full speed, full on. They were playing drum solos through my body. They were running guitar solos through my body, live feed from the concerts. They were communicating with me live feed, and they were telling me I had to get dressed and go and get my bags packed and get out and go outside and wait for Neil to pick me up on his motorcycle. And as weird as that sounds to you, if you know what I'm talking about with this technology, when they pick people up, it doesn't mean they're going to physically drive up to your driveway. It means that they're picking you up live feed real time and interconnecting you on with them. And when Neil goes on his motorcycle trips with Michael J. Mosbach, this is exactly the kind of stuff that they do on their excursions with the communication system. So in answer to your question, it was 24/7. I never had any rest. I couldn't sleep. They had me wired like the Borg so that when I would try to just rest, I'd have constant programs hitting me, whether it was interrogation or programming or visuals. I think I might have mentioned to you this before, but they had what looked like military personnel at one point going from room to room with fatigues. This is what happened to me on Maui. When I would try to rest, and it would just be like I'd see all these people, these military personnel going into these rooms shooting people up, and then I get a bang in my head like virtual reality. That's what someone's just giving an example of some of the games they were playing and the programs they were running inside of me at the time. There were other programs that were very interesting, but I know that this has a lot to do with my natural remote viewing abilities. And what I would see was like little miniature machine worlds, and I'd be able to look at it like a, you know, it looked to me like a camera, like I could zoom in and out with a, like my eyes became a camera. And that was pretty neat, and I enjoyed it, but I kind of liked that part because it was interesting for me. It was very scientific, and I wasn't afraid of what was happening to me. I think my body was in overdrive, and it was in trauma, and there was also a part of trust, even though it sounds very strange. But I trusted spirit on a higher level, and I trusted somehow I just felt like I was going to be okay, but that's me. That's my positive outlook on situations, even in crisis. So, but, yeah, they just constantly slam me 24 hours a day with the technology. So I was pretty loaded up with a lot of layering and a lot of programs that they were doing.
What some people describe, again, I'm not assuming that all the technology this utilized is the same. Yours seem to be more advanced than others that have been utilized against people. But one byproduct of this electromagnetic interference, if you will, is it affected the surroundings. People would report hearing popping sounds or cracking sounds on the ceiling, on the walls. They would have appliances suddenly turn themselves on and even hear words and people talking out of appliances, and not just TVs or radios either. I'm talking about anything that had a hardwired connection, like a coffee brewer or something.
Mm-hmm.
The idea also is to instill such paranoia into these people that when they do relate these things, my goodness, this voice art coming out of the coffee pot, it makes them look crazy, which mm-hmm. is another layer of their security.
Right. I think that's more of the targeted individuals.
Yes.
Didn't have that happen to me. I was completely I was the instrument. In other words, they hacked me completely. I was the instrument. I will say the only thing that I noticed that was an anomalous activity was the lights would go on and off in certain areas, and they were doing that when they were tracking me and doing flybys after they were starting to track me. Because mm-hmm. at one time, when I left the house, I stayed with a friend of mine in the mountains. And this place is a no-fly zone, by the way. And there were lights going on and off. And she was like, I asked her, I said, does that normally happen? And she's like, no. So there was some strange anomalous stuff going on with lights here and there, but there wasn't any of that stuff happening where the paranoia was kicking in. Although I did have somebody tracking me physically in the area. There were several plants that were there. There was one guy, and I swear if I ever see him, I want this guy behind bars, and I can tell you exactly who he is. And he was actually at a storage unit when I was putting my stuff into storage right before I got on the plane for Maui. And he came up, and he handed me an apple. He handed me a CD, and he said, be careful what you listen to. And that SOB was definitely part of the plant, was definitely part of the program. I sent the CD. Unfortunately, being in the kind of distress I was in, I sent the CD later on to Michael J. Mosbach, my handler at the time, because I didn't know what else to do. And then he denied receiving it in the courtroom when I mentioned it, and it just made me livid. But that was evidence, too. And, of course, here I am giving the evidence right back to my handlers, because that's how the program works, you know.
What were some of the things they were showing to you? I imagine that they were showing you things in real time, perhaps to train you, indoctrinate you, whatever the case may be. Was it sort of like a virtual reality environment where you would find yourself in some kind of simulated environment where you were expected to carry out certain tasks, or you were put through your paces in some kind of training, or how did that work?
Well, the training seemed like it was real time. In other words, it was the eyes and ears of my handler controllers and the band live feed, because everything that I was seeing and witnessing, my handler was experiencing, and he was actually manipulating remotely with me through the technology. So I seemed like I had hands-on training with him through him. In other words, and this was pattern recognition. This was also in public, where I would be able to locate objects around a room, whether it's colors, patterns, surveillance cameras, you name it. Every time I look at one object, I could immediately know where everything else was in the room without even having to look. It was like my eyes knew exactly where to go, and that's part of the program. So, yeah, there was training like that going on, live feed, real time. Some other things where it seemed like it was weapons training, and that I definitely think they pulled in and definitely programmed me for that to some degree. And also the fact that I'm a martial artist, too, so that wasn't really hard for them to incorporate something like that. And so far as the virtual reality goes, the only thing that I ever had that was more virtual reality, like I had mentioned, was the military personnel that I saw a few times here and there, and that's when they had the bang in my head. I did see car accidents. I saw accidents happening. It was like a flashback of maybe even her accident or his family's accident. But I saw car accidents. I saw people live feed real time. I saw the band members live feed real time. I saw Getty Lee Space, Live Feed Real Time, Michael, Alex, all of these people were there. It wasn't just a projection of a psychotronic. These were actually them. So I did get information going back and forth until I was getting a little too past their firewalls, what my take was, and then they started bouncing some other stuff back and forth. But I definitely got a good hit on them insofar as locking in on their energy and locking in on who they were, Live Feed Real Time, because we are natural psychics, and I don't think they were expecting, when you plug in a natural psychic or somebody who can see beyond the boundaries and somebody who can use discernment against a psychotronic program, we're able to see beyond the veil. We're able to see beyond the matrix, even if it's a communication based on technology. So I was able to access that. There were so many other programs, James, that I'm trying to remember, and it's really hard, but I know that they're there internally, probably on layers. And that's another thing that had me always concerned over the years. As this progressed, you always wonder to yourself, you know, what exactly was there? And especially if they're using a signal that's embedded in my energy field, which is actually on this documentary I have produced called Eye of the Remote Disclosure and Covert Technology, it shows the implant analysis scan done by Steve Colburn, and you can actually see where these signals are measuring. So I always wondered what was underlying, what kind of encryption was there, and what kind of information is there. So a lot of data. But it definitely was very atypical of a lot of the people that I know have been through abductions. It's just very unique. It was a very different scenario.
What I've discerned thus far, and knowing you from the past and our previous discussions, it's clear to me that when they realized the nature of your very being, Solaris, that you had the high Merkabah content, if you will, that you had the martial arts training, that you had the visual perceptual acuity, I guess a light went on in these psychos, and they decided she could be ideal for this project because we could interface with her and we can put her through her paces and we could really push the boundaries of this technology and see where we can go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it seemed like to you after a while, that found yourself in this scenario, and really it was because the twain met? It was like your skill set, your energy, your DNA, coupled with their technology, they were thinking in transhumanistic terms, perhaps.
Right. No, I agree with you 100% on that one, and I can pretty much validate it because I know the White House was involved in this whole ordeal, and the White House was monitoring everything that was going on with me. And this was back in 2004, mind you, as you know, and all the progressions that have been made through these covert intel. I mean, you're seeing a lot more technology being released now with artificial telepathy and just the hardware. There's been this deployment of these new technologies that have been based on breakthroughs, and I believe a lot of those breakthroughs were due to the experimentation they did on me. So, yeah, I don't discount that at all because they did. They took me from A to Z with all these projects and programs, and I got through them with flying colors. You know, I really did. And I was expecting more out of these people insofar as I kept trusting them and I kept talking to Michael, and I wanted him to resolve it because the whole time they're torturing me, they're programming me. This is not a way to live. They destroyed my life. They destroyed my finances. I mean, they literally cripple you to a point where you can't, you're kind of reliant on nothing. Literally, you're just almost at the point where you're almost destitute. I mean, they put you in those horrible spaces. So I never, ever got him to resolve anything. But I probably mentioned this on previous interviews. When I called Michael J. Mosbach right before I left Maui to go back to Colorado, because I had had enough being on Maui and I needed to go back, what I considered home was Colorado. And I asked him, I said, Michael, I don't know what to do anymore. He got very, very quiet and he said, come to L.A. And I didn't go to L.A. I don't know what caused me not to go to L.A. I don't know what program snapped or kicked in. I just didn't go. I got back on the plane. I went here to Colorado. And then within like a couple months, he shows up and he wants to have me talk in front of a magistrate, and then he sets me up in the courtroom. So I think had I gone to Los Angeles, he would not have done that. He wanted me. Something threatened him as soon as I got back to Colorado. I'm not sure what it was, but he definitely was more intimidated when I came back to Colorado.
What was his purpose with getting you before a magistrate? Well, what did it seem to you that he had in mind?
Well, he said he wanted me to testify. I said, well, how would you like to talk about all this in front of a magistrate? But when I saw him in the courtroom and he lied under oath, and then he said, well, she's talking mind control. He was literally trying to make me look like a loony. In my opinion, I think he was trying to set me up and make me look like some sort of a loony so they could cover their tracks and they could do damage control and they could just sit there and write it off and laugh it off. And I know he's a double agent, so obviously that was his idea of just sitting there and lying under oath. Even though when he told me, how would you like to talk to a magistrate, and I said, yeah, but I need somebody in my corner, he goes, don't worry, I'd be there. But he was there to stab me in the back. He wasn't there sitting with me telling everybody what was happening with me because he was the perpetrator, you know. So it really got ugly, and of course I I have an NSA lawyer, an ex-NSA lawyer who actually worked at Signals Intelligence, who was shadowing the case. And I think if it wasn't for him, I don't know what would have happened, because he was really coming down on the Boulder County. He was coming down on the DA quite hard, and they were afraid of him because of all the manipulation that was going on. I mean, this whole thing was out of control. And, of course, that happened in 2006 when I testified, so very ugly.
Yeah, it's a testament to your integrity, a testament to your strength of character that you've endured all this and so much more, and still retained your wits about you and still are a voice for reason and sanity. That's the irony of this, is they try to make you look insane, mm-hmm. but your natural innate strength and your strength of character kind of overrode that.
Right, yes,
now,
the goddess in me. I have that divine energy that just comes forward and shines. But I will tell you, there's such a cost, James, because my family's gone. My husband that I love dearly, you know, he's now remarried. It's like everything I loved was taken from me, every single thing. And it's just like they don't care. They really don't have any compassion. There's just nothing there for these guys. They just don't seem to care about anything. But thank you for your support. This is a horrific event, and I feel my heart goes out to everybody who's ever gone through anything similar. But, yeah, it's been a long road, and I'll tell you also, it does affect the health. There have been things going on as we progress and we get older in the illusion of. The technology wears down the energy to some degree. It just wears you down. But I have been actually, get this, I've been actually clearing out my lungs and detoxifying my lungs through some information that was passed along to me by somebody who was Special Forces. So remember, I don't know if I told you this, but last time I was having some health issues, right?
Yes.
Well, I've been doing exactly what he's telling me to do for a detox with my lungs, and it's been improving like you wouldn't believe. So.
Wow, definitely. Yeah. I'd like to know more about
that.
Yeah,
I'll definitely share the information with you. And he was under the impression that I had radiation sickness. Now, I don't know if I can confirm that or not, but I do know when you get slammed with radio frequencies and any kind of frequency, I don't care what it is, and you have something embedded in you for year after year after year, I suspect it's going to do something.
Yes. Do you feel that there have been neural implants emplaced in your brain or elsewhere in your body?
Well, according to the implant analysis scan, there are signals in what Steve Colburn said were like implants, but they're signals. And I know how they adapted the signals on there because I have a natural wiring for what we call ascension. In other words, I had everything wired accordingly with my multidimensional design. I know this sounds very esoteric, but literally all my chakras were aligned, my neural circuits were aligned in alignment with what we call ascension, and all they had to do was sit there and run that signal right through my neural circuits and interface it the right way with the artificial telepathy. And those circuits ping. They actually, those areas around my crown chakra, you can actually see the signals going. And I can tell you when I got on a plane in 2010, when I flew from Colorado to Maui, when the plane started taking off, the pain in my head as we kept ascending was incredible. And it was right around the ocular, around the crown. I mean, I thought I was going to just die. And then, of course, as the plane descended back onto Maui, same thing happened. And I will tell you that was part of that technology that was literally, I think the signals were starting to break up as we were moving, as the plane was ascending.
Do you have an ocular implant in your left eye in particular, or is it in both? Or?
I think I have. I'm not sure what it is, but there are signals and there's something there. I can't really confirm what if it's an implant or not because I don't remember them putting an implant in. I do remember them using what felt like a laser into my chest cavity where the signal is, and it's been measured, and that is exactly what Steve Colburn measured. This is exactly what he was able to capture. So that's there. But I will say, because they were accessing me and using me as an instrument to be the eyes and ears of the technology, they had me completely hijacked to a point where they could animate my hands, they could animate my gestures, make me smile. I mean, it's like having what we call possession, but it's actually electronic possession through the handler. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's something like that.
And in some of these scenarios, when they were remotely accessing you, and they were making you do things and putting you through your paces, what at times you would see an image of say, Michael or one of the members of Rush mm-hmm. in your mind telling you to do things or instructing you or insulting you at turns, whatever the case may be?
Yeah, it was live feed real time, and a lot of the time it was Michael. Most of the time it was Michael and Neil. Neil was there, too,
mm-hmm.
but it was most of the time it was him. And it was really interesting is that I wouldn't really get their faces. I had initially had their faces in 2004 live feed real time, and then it was the live feed real time voices. But what was interesting is that whenever they communicate to me live feed real time, they would actually communicate on their Rush website, and you'd see something that actually was exactly what we were talking about, live feed real time. So in other words, they would always have it on there as evidence that we were communicating, and they would do little things that would actually confirm what was going on. between us live feed real time. But yeah, when I was being taken over, they were running these weird programs. I mean, they would, you know, they call it a feedback program. But I would say I'm talking to you right now and I have a sentence. Okay, so I pause for a second. As soon as I pause, they would try to make a hand gesture with my hands, or they try to communicate with me and communicate and use some kind of artificial telepathy to argue what I'm saying or something like that, which is why I started talking super fast to back them up. I've slowed down over the years, but I was super fast forward, as you remember.
Yeah, and I've always likened it, no pun intended, to a form of verbal telepathy when I talk to you.
Definitely
because
psychic
I learn so much.
It's telepathic warfare, there's no doubt.
So that makes perfect sense. So in order to forestall their next effort at undermining your sovereignty, you shortcut them, you head them off at the pass by talking, and it kind of foils their interface.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly it. And that's another reason why I got into live radio, too, you know, because I got tired of having everybody interrogate me or, you know, I didn't mind doing the interviews. But at some point I was like, you know what, I'm tired of them trying to ask me the questions. I'm going to start asking questions, but I'm going to actually get it and put it out there on the radio. So I was glad I did it in that formula.
Yes, and I'm really glad you did, too, because I remember when you contacted me, I was a Skype speaker for one of the Super Soldier Summits, if memory serves, in the Las Vegas area, and then you were one of the speakers, and I was so thankful that you contacted me shortly after that, and we began this friendship,
mm-hmm.
and I've appeared on your show a few times, and I did watch the documentary. It's must viewing to the listeners out there that have not seen the video yet. There will be information given for the listeners to send away for this video. Steve Colburn is on there with you, and he's pointing out to the camera where these signals are coming from, the mm-hmm. intensity of them, the strength of them. It's there. It's there for anyone to see that there is some kind of signal that's being emitted within your body.
Oh, absolutely. And what's interesting is that the highlights are on that documentary, but what people don't know is that I have 45 minutes of raw footage of more intimate scanning, and I should probably release that. I have to get it converted. That's almost like my little safety deposit thing, but I have 45 minutes of that because as we were trying to do all these implant analysis scans, cameras were switching off, things were happening. We had a lot of strange anomalies that were starting to spike up as soon as we started to try to do any measurements, and we have it all captured. So, that's definitely there. There are signals there. And even though over the years the signals get weaker because in 2004 they were so ramped up, and then they were still pretty ramped up, I would say, up until about 2011 or 12, and then they're still there, but they're not as strong as they used to be. But, you know, what happens is we get older, and what I think is that we no longer become the assets we were. In other words, they have the brain templates. They have everything they need from me. So they pretty much put you out to pasture. That's my impression anyway. I could be wrong, but that's the way it feels to me, is that they get you when you're really in your prime, which is what they did to me, and then they utilize you, they maximize it, and then they store it, and then as things progress, will they figure, oh, well, the technology will eventually disintegrate or something? I don't know if it does or doesn't, to be honest with you. I have no idea how it works.
Yeah, and the way that they operate, it's to them, it's just more collateral damage. They could care less about what happens to the individuals they're subjecting to this mm-hmm. horror. All they want to do is advance their agenda. So they'll take what they've learned, the template, if you will, from your brain patterns and how they've what they've learned from remotely trying to manipulate you, and then they're applying it to others. I'm mm-hmm. sure that along the way they found others that they can plug into this program and do the same thing to, or and then some.
Right. They also have the EEG cloning. So in other words, they take your brain template. You're probably familiar with this, James, but they take the
yes.
the template and they clone it, and they can literally distribute it on to whoever, a hive collective, so to speak, or even at children, children or embryos. And that's another thing that I was always wondering, you know, because Pert decided all of a sudden his new wife, all of a sudden was in a yank to have a child after they inducted me. Well, they were married a long time and they didn't have any, she had no interest in having a kid, and all of a sudden she's in a yank to have one. It always made me kind of wonder if they weren't using the templates from me onto that child, and I know that sounds really strange, but I don't discount anything. He's got some strange access to this technology. He's been involved with Signals Communication System for a long time. He uses the synthetic telepathy because, as I've mentioned this many times over, it's a perfect kind of communication system and surveillance for anybody because you're not having, you don't have a headset. You don't need a radio. You don't need a walkie-talkie. You're interconnected live feed real time. You've got the eyes and ears of your communication system set up so that you know where to go. They can tell you where to go. If there's danger around the corner, they can tell you. If there's something around the corner you want to avoid, they'll let you know. I know because I've been through it. It's amazing technology. And I have to tell you, James, I think the saddest part is I tried to stay really positive about it. I wrote the pros and cons about it in my book, Eye of the Remote, Black Operations in Areas Beyond 52. But I also, you know, I thought to myself, my goodness, you know, you guys have all this access to this technology. Couldn't you have used it for the best, for the better?
Yes,
instead of using it to torture and harm, control, manipulate, discredit. I mean, it was just terrible. It's just horrible the way they utilized this technology.
Yes, one could see, like, in a purely neutralist objective standpoint, how something like this, I'm not saying it's good or it's for the betterment of humanity, but one can see how they could utilize this, say, on an operative, and then just be their eyes and ears in real time, guiding them through some dangerous scenario, mm-hmm. and, you know, doing that kind of thing. But the ways they go about doing these things, they're non-consensual. It's a violation of everything that we believe in. Mm-hmm. And one thing I must point out, if you remember, Solaris, after the very first two times we communicated, we did the shows together, mm-hmm. and then we would have a post-show discussion. And, you know, as many people in the field know, it's always the meetings after the meetings, whether at a conference or on Skype sessions after interviews, where the most hardcore information is shared.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting was, right after those two discussions that you and I had, I got messed with big time. And in both instances, Rush played a key role.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I had my dream hacked, Alex Lifeson appeared to be in this kind of frenzied state, his eyes all red, and he was just in a manic state, and he was just going after me. And then later on in this dream, Neil Peart was trying to run me down in his motorcycle, and it was all just frenzied. It was frenetic. It was mm-hmm. it was really frightening, actually.
Right. Well, that sounds like their personalities to some degree.
Yes, and then the next time we talked, that night again, my dream was hacked. I found myself in what seemed to be the booth that overlooks a theater. Down below, I could see rows of chairs and then a stage. And the stage was like a sound stage or a recording studio or something. And Geddy Lee was there, and he had some kind of thing on his fingers, similar to a castanet, I would think, where every time he said something, he would simultaneously click this castanet device in his fingers, like, clop, 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 every time he opened his mouth, as if to mock me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the booth watching this. It was like, at turns, I was there in his presence, and at other moments, I was back in this booth looking down at this theater. There was young people there that appeared to be there with me in this booth, and I can't remember at the moment what they were doing there, but I remember the sensation of going through this experience, knowing that I was being dream hacked, knowing that it was some kind of externally engineered thing that I was being subjected to. I could actually feel mm-hmm. parts of my brain being messed with. Like, I could feel like energy coming into my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened right on the heels of those two very first discussions that I ever had with you. And that really irked me. Now, I believed you anyway, because I'm somewhat psychic in my own right, and I can tune into people's vibes, and I can tune into their feelings, and I can learn a lot just from their energy field. So I knew you were telling the truth to begin with, but when I experienced those two events right after talking to you, I was really, really upset,
mm-hmm.
because of the smugness with which they appeared, the arrogant, not-give-a-toss attitude, completely at variance with the image they project as being a band that loves their fans, that cares about people, et cetera, it gives a whole new twist on the transhumanist aspect also. And I'd like you to comment on this, because many people think, people that are aware of the New World Order amongst their fan base think, oh, look, Russia's trying to warn us. They're telling us in their album 2112 about this priesthood at work that's out for global domination. Oh, look at this song, Free Will. They're warning us about mind control, right? Mm-hmm. And when one listens to the lyrics of Free Will, it's all about mind control. But actually, in true intelligence, counterintelligence fashion, Russia was speaking in opposites. They're it's the inverse. They're right. Actually showing what's going on, but they're not exposing it.
Correct, because they're behind it, and they're actually the perpetrators of the technology. And when I say that, I mean that Pert has used this. As I mentioned before, he has books called Masked Writer and Ghost Writer. The Masked Writer and Ghost Writer is a formula that they use insofar as covert surveillance and inductions that they do while they're on the road. And Michael and Neil are notorious for actually inducting and interconnecting, is what they use the terminology for, live feed real time, their targets, whoever they are, whether they're men, women, children, adults. I know that they tried to get mistresses and girlfriends with this stuff. Obviously, they have intimacy with it because that's what they tried to do with me. So obviously, there's a part to it that they want to have, whether they want to train for personnel or recruit somebody or show them, or maybe they have issues with that person. Who knows? It seems to me like they ran an array of different kinds of tests and different types of programs on me. And when I decided I wasn't about to put up with this type of abuse, that's when they really, really turned on me. But I'll tell you point blank, yeah, you're right on. He's basically, he claims he's schizophrenic. He's admitted it on interviews. You can find it. You can probably Google it, and you'll see that Pert says he's a schizophrenic person. He's not schizophrenic. He's been compromised by the technology and the communication system, in my opinion. And I'm pretty sure I'm 99.9% correct, because I was interconnected with him live feed real time. But it takes a real psychopath to deploy this kind of technology, destroy somebody's life, and then lie about it with your best buddies. And then that's what really disturbs me the most, is that they're sitting there and all these fans, they're just completely snowballed. They have no idea what these guys are up to. And at one point, they used their fans as a human shield against me when they toured here at Red Rocks. And they said that they had a picture of me, and they were passing it around saying, she's armed and dangerous. If you see her, turn it into security. And that was with the surveillance at the casinos at the time. And we were laughing about it in the control room, because I'm like, can you believe this crap? These guys are actually trying to set me up and incite their fans to commit a potential hate crime against me. That's right there, they should be arrested for that. So a lot of things were going on, but they're exactly what you say. They're very arrogant. They think they obviously got away with this crime, you know, and all I can do is put the truth out there. But I do know I have a lot of people that support me, and I also know that there are a lot of people inside that do know I'm right. I would love to see people who have been tagged with that communication system by the band, and I know there are other people, come forward and actually say something. I don't think that's ever going to happen. And I can tell you, James, I know it for a fact that Selena Taylor was plugged into that technology, and so was Jacqueline Taylor, and they're no longer alive. And I'll tell you about Selena Taylor. Neil Peart used to call her his not-so-human child. She was plugged into that technology, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
You mentioned earlier that at times you would get beamed into your mind's eye images of the crash and the accidents that they had endured. Selena Taylor was his daughter. Is that correct?
Well, I call her a pseudo daughter, because I'm not convinced she was actually a biological daughter. I'm convinced that he has all these. He creates these scenarios. They're almost like fake families. I hate to say it, but that's what it reminds me of. And the information that I was accessing was that she was plugged into the technology. As a matter of fact, I was under the impression, the more I started to decode all this stuff, I realized that when I was communicating with him in the 80s and the 90s, and he'd send me a postcard, she was involved with him, interconnected. In other words, when he responds to me, I think she was actually tagging along on the communication system. He wasn't able to communicate with me the same way he did in 2004, because I don't believe they had access to that technology, and maybe my frequency wasn't ramped up to the level it needed to be. Who knows? But I know she was plugged into that technology.
Do you think it's possible that, hold that thought, I just want to ask a question. Do you think it's possible that we know there is such a thing as memory transference, wherein they take the memories of individual A and somehow transmit it into the brain of individual B and make them relive said experience? Do you think something along those lines happened, where the accidents and some of the experiences that the Taylors had endured were somehow transmitted to your conscious awareness?
Yeah, I actually do, especially when it comes to Selena Taylor. It could have been a bleed-through from Neil. But I definitely know that for a fact. As a matter of fact, all of them, in my opinion, I've inherited something from every one of them that were interconnected with me live feed. There's no doubt about it. And also, as I mentioned in my book, Eye of the Remote, Black Operations in Areas Beyond 52, I talk about my mother's funeral, which I was inducted in April in 2004. She passed away in June. And after that, they interconnected a technology where they were actually mimicking her voice pattern like the Terminator, and they were communicating using her voice, but I knew it wasn't my mother, to put me in a place of vulnerability and to, yes, like, make me get sad. And then when I'd start to break down with tears, they'd say, you can't cry, and they'd write these programs, and it would literally just stop me. I could not cry, James. Anytime I wanted to have an emotional release, they wouldn't let me cry. That was not acceptable. This is what I mean by trying to break you down and train you to have no emotions, to not have any emotional response whatsoever. So, and then when they were telling me these things, when I went to the funeral, and Michael and Neil were there live feed real time, they were saying all sorts of things about my mother in her casket. I mean, literally, they were saying that she was being married in the underworld and all this weird stuff. I mean, they were saying such bizarre stuff. And when I look back, you have to understand these guys come from an area of dark rituals. So I don't know what they're doing when these people are transferring out, but I do know that they're accessing their brainwave activity. They're mapping their brainwave activity with the technology, and they're interconnecting it the same way they did with me and using those templates to communicate with a false, what we call fake ghost, a fake spirit, a manufactured synthetic ghost.
Yeah, that sounds very believable, because what they do also in some of the underground bases is they map the ethereal essence, if you will, mm-hmm, of all of us. All life forms basically have a bioenergetic signature, which can be accessed, amplified, modulated, et cetera, et cetera. So if they're going to go that far, why wouldn't they do something like this? Why wouldn't they intermix some of the memories and feelings and sorrows and grief or whatever from one person onto another, and then at the same time forbid you from having any kind of normal human reaction or emotion?
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that it's possible that your very higher dimensional galactic state of being prevented them from doing other things to you. Like, for example, if you lacked empathy, if you did not have this firm divine source grounding, it's quite possible they could have compelled you remotely to act out in ways which you would never do in normal waking consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It would use you as an operative to commit crimes and do God knows what else.
I totally agree with you. I think that I fit that category insofar as being the martial artist, the black belt, but also they weren't counting on my integrity and my compass, my moral compass. I agree with you 100%, James. I think they looked at me as something like out of Blade Runner, like a mix between a pleasure model and a psi spy. You know, somebody who would make an excellent spy, or maybe somebody who would work for Michael. You know, as one of his personnel or something like that. There's no doubt about it. So, but I do have integrity. You know, I'm a nonviolent person, but when they push you to the limits, they literally push you where you can't back out of it. You're in your own body. They're using a technology to corner you and force you to hear, see, and listen and experience, and then they take you over remotely. You've got to fight this. And that's what I had to do, and that's why I think I came out so powerful. But at the same time, like the Enterprise, you know, and Star Trek, I've taken a lot of hits. My body's taken a lot of hits, but I'm still okay. And I don't think they ever, ever expected me to get this far. I really don't.
Yes, I think that it was a huge mistake on their part. I mean, call it the law of unintended consequences, call it divine will, whatever. But they bit off more than they can chew when they plugged you into this program. They had no idea that you would maintain your moral compass and then be a voice for sanity, for reason, for exposure.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It was almost, and I always wondered, and I mentioned this the other day on my show, I was like, I sometimes wonder if they weren't using me as a voice piece or a voice for what Pert always wanted to say but couldn't, because he was trapped in the communication system and he was trapped in this whole thing. And I always wondered if they weren't trying to use me as somebody maybe to ease their own conscience, but at the same time, the cost of doing that for my own life, at my expense and suffering, is inexcusable.
Yes, that's right. Now, do you think at this point there's any semblance of compassion, humanity, conscience left in any of those players that you mentioned, the band members as well as Mosbacher, or are they thoroughly, thoroughly just plugged into this mindset of if it feels right, do it. If it feels good, do it. The end justifies the means.
Right. That's Pert's motto, by the way. It's he used to say, if it gives you pleasure, do it, or something like that. But I'll tell you point blank, I'll tell you what makes Pert now happy is the fact that he has a family again. So at my expense and suffering, he's reenacting his family patterning from the last family that was taken out by the technology. He satiated himself by destroying my life in some sick way, and I don't know why. I will say that the other members, they had every chance to come clean. They had every chance to say, hey, this is wrong, and stand up, do restitution for damages, whatever. They never did. So that tells me that they really don't care. That tells me that I don't think there's any hope for these people. And by the time they decide to turn it around and be good people, it's too late. James, this happened to me in 2004, and the whole time they were just pounding me with assault and battery with directed energy weapons. Even my lawyer said that's what it is. It's an assault and battery with a directed energy weapon, any way you look at it, right? Violating my civil rights, my free will, you name it, they're doing it. And the same thing with Michael. I always had a connection close to Michael, and the reason being because he was a very close handler to me. And when I was crying or when I try to cry, I talked to him on the phone. And even though my emotions, I couldn't really express myself, I would literally talk to him for a very long time. So he was like the main handler and Neil. But Michael was really there, and I really trusted Michael. I must say to you, if anybody was going to turn it around for me, I thought it was going to be Michael. I really, really did. And maybe Alex. But none of them, you know, so I don't think there's any hope for it. I think that that's it. It's over. And like I said, now that their fans are all, they've used them as a human shield against me. I still, when I communicate this data, you know, I get out there and I communicate the truth. And once in a blue moon, you get a Rush fan who's just completely, you know, brainwashed, and they don't take to the information very well.
Yes, that's not surprising. So many people have a difficult time making mental adjustments to new information or information that is confronting to them.
Mm-hmm.
So many people are paradigmatic thinkers. They're indoctrinated into thinking a certain way, and then when any kind of conflicting information comes along, they reject it out of hand. And I know that when I first heard the Rush aspects of your story, yes, it was a big disappointment for me, because although they were not one of my favorite bands, I'd seen them in concert. I like some of their music.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one has this idealized image of what these entertainers and artists and musicians are all about. And so often we're disappointed, mm-hmm, when we find out that in real life they're quite the opposite. And we know that the entertainment industry has long been a major plank of this New World Order agenda. They, mm-hmm, push so many social engineering themes.
Exactly.
And so much propaganda through the music industry in particular. So that didn't surprise me that Rush would be involved at the very basic level of propaganda. But when I found out through you that they were involved in this hardcore remote neural interface mind control, and then when I started thinking about their songs and the music that they've been putting out, so much of it has a transhumanist aspect to it,
mm-hmm,
like The Body Electric. One listens to the lyrics of that song,
mm-hmm,
on and on and on and on. It's like, where was Neil Peart getting these ideas from? Were they really his, or were they the result of the indoctrination he was being subjected to?
Right. Well, he's actually one of the perpetrators. So, yeah, he tested it out himself. Apparently he was modified. And he's been using it and deploying it on whoever he wants to with the rest of the band. They're all part of it. But I'll say the same thing, James. When I was first communicating with him in the 80s, I had great respect for Neil Peart. I had no idea he was involved in this stuff. I was very genuine and very kind. I was never a groupie, like a weird little chick. You know, I'd always be very articulate and professional with him. I'd always call him Mr. Peart. There was no reason for him to go after me the way he did. There really isn't. But I do think he always had something in the back of his head that was after me. Be honest with you, I don't know what it was. Maybe he always knew there was something about me that was different. Who knows?
Well, this is a good time for a break. What we can do when we come back from the break, Solaris, is whatever you want to talk about as far as from 2004 up to the present time.
Okay.
Whatever you feel is significant, please share with us. Whatever you're comfortable with.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to take a break for the moment, and we'll be back on the other side of the hour. Thank you.